Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Giants third baseman Matt Duffy joins us each homestand.
I think when I'm going best is when I'm just staying short, trying to hit the ball right back up the middle and seeing it well.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Toscalito Tire and Automotive, with four Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscalito, more than just a tire store. And joining us today, our very special guest to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks as they play the Giants again in a day game, the finale of the series, Jeff Munn, who has been a recent broadcaster for the Diamondbacks and is known around Arizona for his work with Arizona State. And Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us here on Inside China Basin. And boy, this has been all Diamondbacks so far in this series. And I guess we're not surprised because they play really well at AT&T Park.
It's really surprising, Joe, and it's great to be with you, that they've had the kind of run of success in that ballpark that they've had. Because, as you know, last year they led the National League in run scores. It's a very offensive-minded club, or has been the last couple of years. And offense usually isn't what wins you a lot of ball games at AT&T. But there have been little factors, and it's interesting, you know, usually when the D-backs have gone in there the last couple of years, eventually, Paul Goldschmidt would base Tim Lincecum. Well, that obviously can't happen right now.
Right.
And that's usually the big storyline is, you know, they can't get Paul Goldschmidt out. But in this series, it's been Wellington Castillo. It's been Yasmani Tomas. They finally got a really dominant outing from Zach Greinke last night. And going into this game today, the other half of the big pitching upgrade goes, Shelby Miller. There was some question whether or not he would pitch, given that he hurt his hand in his last start Saturday at San Diego. But a lot of people have come off the ledge, especially after last night. If Miller doesn't pitch well today, they'll be right back on the ledge first thing tomorrow morning.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you know, you have so many expectations when you bring in high-profile pitchers. I mean, especially Zach Greinke, one of the best pitchers in baseball. And, you know, he just didn't get off to a good start. And Shelby Miller, they make that trade to get him, and he wasn't off to a good start either. So, you know, how disappointing was it? You have to really temper your enthusiasm when you get off to a great start, but you also have to sort of look at the realistic picture early in the year as well. I mean, guys are getting settled in. I don't think you get too high or too low the whole year, but especially early on, there seems to be an overreaction a lot of times with a lot of teams. So what was the reaction, you think, in Arizona?
Well, there was a lot of panic, Joe, and it was also coupled with the fact that the D-backs came very close to going unbeaten in spring training and were just knocking the hide off the ball offensively. So you combine that with you got Zach Greinke going on opening night against the Rockies, and he's not able to get out of the fourth inning, and the Rockies are knocking the ball all over the yard. And then when the Cubs came in, the offense kind of ground to a halt. And, you know, let's face it, guys like Arrieta, Lester, and John Lackey can do that to you. And that was really what started to get people really panicked, was all the things that had been going well in spring training weren't going well the first week to 10 days of the season. Now, you and I have been around this game long enough to know that you never, ever, ever buy into spring training numbers totally. And yeah, and it's basically what it came down to. The media and the fan base really got giddy over what they were seeing in the spring. And when it didn't happen the first week to 10 days, there was immediate pushing of the panic button. But the other thing we know, as you said, it's a long season. There's 146 games left for the D-backs, including today's day game. So there's plenty of time for them to get things straight. Now, I've been, frankly, they already have, especially in terms of the pitching. You know, and again, you're not going to light up the scoreboard every night at AT&T, but they've done just enough in this series to win ball games. Obviously, the game Monday was a high-scoring game, and they needed a lot of offense, and that was a real gut-check kind of game, too. So I think that was where a lot of the anxiety came from. you put up video game like numbers offensively all through the spring, and then all of a sudden, just literally like the flip of the switch, the light goes out. But now they're back at 500, and now, you know, the other thing that's worked in their favor is nobody, the Rockies, the Dodgers, the Giants haven't been on a really ridiculous hot streak and buried the D-backs when they had the chance.
We'll have more with Arizona sportscaster Jeff Munn right after this.
You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at six Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide warranty backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. No torture at Toscalito Tire and Automotive. With four Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo, Toscalito, more than just a tire store.
You looked at the Diamondbacks in the offseason, and when they made those moves to bring in Greinke and Miller, I think a lot of experts were saying, okay, this is a good pick to be in contention with the Giants and the Dodgers, maybe win the division. And that A.J. Pollock injury, I mean, it changed a lot of people's minds just saying that guy is so important to that lineup. How important is he in your mind? How much do they miss him right now? And what is the latest? I mean, I heard that he might be able to come back later on in the season.
He would like to be able to come back late in the season, but he's had this type of injury before, Joe, and it cost him an entire year. So the club is not saying definitively when he will be back or if he will be back this season. They're trying to shroud it in as much mystery as possible. I think it's safe to say his absence will be lengthy if it's not for the entire season. As to the impact, there's a twofold thing. Obviously, he's a very solid hitter, a 300 type hitter coming off an all-star year. He's also a very good base runner, very fast on the bases. Then you flip it over to the defense. Center fielder, he's the quarterback of the outfield, and he's spent a lot of time last year with Yasmani Tomasin left, and Tomas does not speak a great deal of English, and so the communication needed to really be worked on. Now, without Pollock, they open the season with Chris Owings, a shortstop by trade, a middle infield, he's also played some second, playing in center field. The reason for that was, on a number of occasions under Kirk Gibson when he managed the club, he just had Owings go out during BP and shag fly balls in the outfield just to see how he would look, and the results came out very favorably. So when Pollock went down, the immediate thought was to plug Owings in at center and maybe combo it between Owings and a guy that's been in our system here in Arizona for a couple of years, Socrates Brito. Brito is currently down at AAA because the pitching had been so worn out over the last week or so. They had to get an extra arm up. Owings has handled the position, I would say, fairly well. The coaches have been concerned about the fact that you make different types of throws from the outfield than you do from the infield, and they don't want to mess with his mechanics up. So I think they're still in the market for – there's been a lot of talk about them talking to Michael Bourne and maybe signing Michael Bourne and getting him in. I think they're very much interested in trying to find a longer-term solution for this year at center field rather than going with Owings for the balance of the season because, as I said, he's a natural middle infielder, and they don't want to mess up his mechanics to the point where he can't go back to playing the middle infield when Pollock comes back or they pick up another guy to man that position.
Well, that's tough when you have to switch between that long throw from the outfield and then the infield. I mean, you really have to be talented to make those switches. You know, speaking of infielders, how about the start that Segura is off to, Gene Segura? I mean, he's a guy who could play an important role on this team. And normally, I mean, his career, he's about a 250, 260 type hitter, but he's off to a really good start with the bat. What are they expecting out of him, you think?
Well, I was really excited when they made the deal, Joe, because they didn't give up a great deal. Aaron Hill, who's a terrific guy, is at the back end of his career with a pretty heavy contract. Chase Anderson, starting pitcher, he can be a very good middle-of-the-rotation type of starter down the road. But they did not give up a great deal to get Segura. And we know from a couple of years ago that Segura was an all-star himself at shortstop, had the personal tragedy with the loss of his son, and the people in Milwaukee kind of thought contract negotiations were distracting him. I think he's a classic case of a guy who needed a change of scenery. And so expectations were, I think, for him to do pretty much what he's done most of his career, as you said. He's a 250, 260 hitter. They're going to be pretty satisfied with what they've gotten from him. I really do think that he's going to have a very solid year for the club, just for that reason, just the chance to get a change of scenery. And again, you know, all the things that happened to him away from baseball while in Milwaukee. Sometimes a guy just needs a change of address, and it's nothing that the Brewers did. It's just one of those circumstantial things. And I really do think he could turn out to be one of the better acquisitions this club, you know, they made a lot of acquisitions over the winter. Segura's might be the one that has the biggest payoff.
More with Jeff Munn in just a moment.
Today's interview is being sponsored by Rose Pistola. Since 1996, the well-known Italian restaurant has become a must-visit for locals and world travelers alike. Chef Steve Walker and his team serve authentic Italian cuisine like crispy wood-fired pizzas, pastas, and seafood. Try classic, the grilled branzino that's prepared tableside. Happy hour is offered at the Fully Stocked Bar weekdays from 3 until 6 p.m. Be sure to check out Rose Pistola's incredible list of grappa, a traditional Italian spirit. Live jazz trios perform Thursday through Sunday nights. Stop by for brunch on the patio. Yes, they are dog friendly. Rose Pistola, conveniently located at 532 Columbus Avenue, right in the heart of North Beach. Join Rose Pistola as they celebrate 20 years.
What about the way Jake Lamb is swinging the bat to start the year? And he's a Giants killer. You know, I looked it up. His career batting average against the Giants is .319. So he normally hits the ball well against San Francisco, and he's doing a great job in this series and so far early in the year. So what do you think when you see Jake Lamb and looking at his future?
Well, certainly the club was depending on Jake Lamb to have a strong year in this respect. They felt like they needed to play Tomas in the outfield. He had played some at third, primarily at third, last year at the big league level. But Lamb, obviously, is more of a natural third baseman. And he also, when he's swinging the bat well, he provides something this club doesn't have a lot of, and that's left-handed power. And you saw it on display, especially in the game Monday night when his home run tied the game in the ninth inning. This is a guy that I'm not going to sit here and say 30, 40 home runs a year, but he's got power, and they need that power at third base. They've had an enormous problem the last couple of years settling on an everyday third baseman. Well, Lamb could be that guy. And for this team to contend at the beginning of the year, when you started looking at the D-backs and their potential, there were several question marks. And one of them was, can Jake Lamb be the guy at third base? So far, and you know, as you said, he tends to handle giant pitching pretty well. If he's able to do that over an extended period of time, I think it makes a huge difference for this club. Because as I said, they just, you know, there's a lot of right-handed power in that order. There's not a lot of left-handed power. Peralta gives you good, you know, contact. He's a gap hitter. He can occasionally hit a home run, but he runs the bases well. Lamb is more of the power threat. And so if he has a strong year, it really makes that offense, especially without Pollock in the lineup, it really makes that offense a lot more effective.
We talked about the starting pitchers. What about the bullpen? I mean, Tyler Clippard, what does it mean to have him in there? And, you know, Brad Ziegler, another guy who kills the Giants. I saw he's got a scoreless inning streak now that's at, 22 straight outings anyway, where he hasn't given up a run. I mean, he's closing out games so far this year, 4-for-4. So how about the back end of that bullpen?
Well, I think Clippard, the one thing that he does is he provides you a guy that you can, he can be a workhorse in the bullpen and pitch a seventh, eighth inning, come in the sixth inning. So he's kind of that guy, kind of the role that Ziegler had before he became the closer. There are people, Joe, here who felt last year that they would prefer to see Ziegler in that kind of seventh, eighth inning role. He's a ground ball pitcher. And you like to have him available in situations where a double play ball is needed. But he's been so effective in the ninth inning that the D-backs, Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart, have just felt like, look, we have an effective guy in the ninth inning. Let's leave him where he is. We don't need to go out and have to find an established closer because we have one. The rest of the bullpen, and it is, if there was one area with the pitching going into the season that you kind of looked at and you weren't sure what you had, it was the bullpen, because Randall Delgado has had a hard time since coming over in the Justin Upton trade, really finding a consistent role in this bullpen. There have been a collection of guys that can do a bunch of different things, you know, power arms, guys that pitch down in the zone. But the roles have not been clearly defined, that you use this guy in this situation. With Clippard, I think actually he has a ripple effect that he can kind of define the roles for everybody else in the bullpen. And it gives Chip Hale a guy, as I said, that he can run out there a lot. Not too much, obviously, but enough to where he's a guy you can really depend on. I think for a guy that they signed very late before spring training started, again, it could end up being a key acquisition because he allows the rest of the bullpen to kind of figure out where they fit in.
We'll get back to the conversation with Jeff Munn, Arizona broadcaster, right after this.
Hey, how'd you get those cool new shirts for the trade show so fast?
Access!
Who makes all that great clothing for high schools and colleges?
Access!
How do I get my company logo embroidered on some nice polo shirts?
Access Uniforms is your go-to resource for customized clothing. Just call us to find the right product, email your artwork, and your order will be on its way directly from our factory right here in Burlingame. Call Access Uniforms at 877-755-LOGO. That's 877-755-L-O-G-O.
How about team leaders? Paul Goldschmidt is a guy who's going to be a perennial all-star type player. But he's a quiet guy, isn't he? I mean, is he a guy who kind of leads by example? Is there anybody else that you think is in that clubhouse that is sort of the fiery leader?
No. I say this, you're right. Paul Goldschmidt he's a dream in terms of the kind of guy. He doesn't have a huge ego. The story has been written more times than people can count about the very club-friendly contract he signed a couple of years ago, and he's never even raised a whimper about wanting to redo the deal. He is quiet. And you think to yourself, you go back to the first 10 days of the year when things weren't going well, you start asking yourself, who's the guy that would call the players' meeting or shut the clubhouse door and lock it and just, turn over the post-game spread and say, this is enough, we can't do this.
All right.
Goldie's not that guy. Greinke is not that guy for two reasons. He, too, is very quiet, as you know. And starting pitchers, as you know, are not usually the guys who are, quote-unquote, team leaders. So you look around that clubhouse. There are a lot of really good character guys in that clubhouse. But is there somebody that's going to get up and scream? And the answer to that question is not really. I don't know if that's an absolute necessity to have in a clubhouse if you're going to be a contender, which they obviously see themselves as being. But if they hit another rough patch, and all teams, in fact, Bruce Bochy said it today in the Chronicle, everybody goes through a rough patch or two.
Right.
And the Giants are going through one. Well, the Giants have got some guys, the Posies, the Belts, the Pagans, who can get up and talk to the rest of the team and say, that's enough. We've not seen an example of that out of Goldschmidt. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy in the clubhouse. He's a terrific guy in the clubhouse. But he is quiet. And, you almost think back to a couple of years ago when the clubhouse had Justin Upton and Chris Young and Ryan Roberts. There were some guys that they would. Young in particular was a guy who could get the club's attention without yelling and screaming at people. And there's been a real emphasis the last couple of years of going with guys that good character guys, but at the same time, they've turned out to be guys that are pretty much very all fly below the radar. I'll be really interested to see as the season unfolds, if they start to struggle again and start to lose some ground in the division, how that team tends to police itself. And again, for all his talent, and Paul Goldschmidt is the classic guy a lot of people still don't know a lot about because where he plays and the fact that he doesn't gain a lot of attention with his mouth. I'll be really interested to see if, you know, who stands up and becomes that guy that closes that clubhouse door and says enough is enough.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I wonder, how about the dynamic from what you've seen with Tony La Russa, Dave Stewart, Chip Hale, just that whole operation and what they plan on for the future? Because I'm not going to say they came out of nowhere to sign Greinke. I mean, they needed to do something there, but they did spend a lot of money on him, and you know, and they spent up some of the prospects. They traded those prospects to get Shelby Miller. They made some moves. So do you see it sort of coming to fruition in a way that Tony La Russa wants, as far as maybe a timetable? You know, do you think that it's going to take, you know, a little bit more to get to where he wants to go?
Well, the consensus I read nationally, Joe, is that the D-backs still lack one more piece maybe to become right eyeball to eyeball with the Dodgers and Giants. I will tell you this, that the reason the moves were made, a lot of time, there's been a comparison to the 2013 Blue Jays or last year's Padres, where they go out and just make a whole slew of moves and try to get a whole bunch of newcomers to come in and bond together all at once. And obviously, you know, even the 2012 Marlins, it didn't work. I don't really think that's the case here. You already had a very, as I said, a very effective offense. And La Russa and Stewart looked at it and said, listen, if we go out and we upgrade the starting pitching, and we already have this very capable offense, all of a sudden, we're right there. They, too, kind of felt, even the day they signed him, early in that day, they were kind of just thinking out loud, wouldn't it be great to sign Zach Greinke? And La Russa apparently just went to the phone and made a call and just, you know, a kick the tires kind of conversation. And before he was done, he had Greinke on a contract. The reason that happened so fast, by the way, is that Greinke has said he was a great admirer last year of the way the D-backs played. Looking at it from the other dugout with the Dodgers and being with a division opponent, he saw them quite a bit. And he told a number of players with last year's Diamondbacks how much he admired the way they played the game. So you get a call from Tony La Russa, and Greinke has already said, I like the way they play. Well, you know, that puts Arizona, you know, way up on his list. And like a lot of other clubs, the D-backs have signed a new TV deal that's given them a lot more money. So those were all factors in the Greinke thing. The Shelby Miller trade, the angst over it was about what was given up. Aaron Blair is off to a terrific start at AAA, 3-0, 1.42 ERA, and he was the top pitching prospect in the system. Dansby Swanson, the number one overall pick in the draft last June, and a lot of people think his ceiling is really high, and if he stays healthy, then the Braves have a middle infielder, or they might put him in the outfield, that will be very productive for them for 10 to 12 years. Ender Inciarte is on the DL, but when he's healthy, very capable outfielder and leadoff guy. So there's always, the concern has always been about the price that was paid. And La Russa and Stewart continue to say, our farm system is not, you know, is not depleted because we made this deal. They do have, you know, they have some talented pitching at AAA. And Archie Bradley was called up to make the start Monday, struggled a bit, but he's still a guy that has major league potential. But are they in a win now mode? If you're saying win now 2016, I'm going to say no, because they look at it as a three-year window. They have Goldschmidt under contract for another 3 years. They have Pollock under club control. So it isn't that they have to win this year because a bunch of guys are going to walk. They feel like they have a three-year window to get this thing done. And if they don't get to the postseason this year, I don't know. There's a lot of concern how much money they have left to go out and bolster the roster even further. But I could see them trying to be aggressive, and this is looking way down the road, obviously, but I could see them being as aggressive as they can to bolster the roster further. I think Dave Stewart has really shown his talent as a general manager, because they freed up payroll last year by trading Bronson Arroyo, who had a very heavy contract, and their top pick from 2014, a very young right-handed pitcher named Tuki Toussaint, to the Braves. A lot of people here were not really happy about that, because how can you trade a guy that you just drafted first, you know, in the first round the year before? And then, you know, as I said, they got really jumpy over the fact that, well, you draft Dansby Swanson number one overall.
Yeah.
And less than a year later, he's gone. But I say, as I said, I think they look at it like we don't just have a 1 year window. We've got a 3 year window, and we're trying to take advantage of having two really solid offensive talents. Granted, one of them's injured, but two solid offensive talents that we have control of for several years.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, I definitely think the interest in the Diamondbacks should be there. This team, you know, it's a good team. They're going to contend. They've won four in a row. So, like you said, everybody should be pretty happy with the way things are going right now. As we finish up, speaking of just the fans there in the Phoenix area being interested in sports, you cover Arizona State sports. I mean, tell us a little bit about that, just the level of interest there in Arizona State and what you've been doing lately as far as that.
Well, I do the radio broadcast for Arizona State women's basketball, who just it's interesting that they, since the conference, the Pac-10 became the Pac-12, the women's basketball program won the first conference championship that ASU's been able to get since the expansion of the conference. That's not to mean that the other teams aren't doing well. Obviously, football has been pretty successful since Todd Graham arrived. In fact, his first year, he brought ASU to the bowl game that was played at AT&T. Men's basketball has gotten a lot of attention because of the hiring of Bobby Hurley. I just watched that ESPN E60 film on him a couple of weeks ago. And, he is a very intense, competitor, and it's going to be really interesting to see how he puts a program together. I'll tell you the interesting thing, Joe, with Arizona State, to me, I just spent the weekend out watching them play baseball against Cal. And I know that a lot of people, when they think Arizona State in baseball, it is a program that's had a lot of success over the years, five national championships. They're in a bit of a rebuild under Tracy Smith, who was the head coach at Indiana when Kyle Schwarber played there. And he's kind of retooling the roster a little bit. But just to show you how funny the game of baseball is, and you hear these stories all the time. The Devils lost to Cal, who's having a very strong year under David Esker. Lost to him in 11 innings on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how this thing works in college baseball. You get to Sunday, and if you're a coach or a manager or a pitching coach, you're kind of looking around saying, who can lift an arm today and give me two or three innings?
Right.
Well, that's where ASU was down to. They ended up starting a freshman left-hander named Ryan Dixon, who had thrown one inning all year. And now he's going to face the number 15 team in the country. And you're thinking going in, well, if they get three innings out of this guy, they're ahead of the game. Well, he threw a complete game, three-hit shutout, struck out seven. He had two runners on in the ninth inning. And Smith, the head coach, goes out to the mound. And all he said to him was, Brian, you're throwing a complete game shutout. Have some fun. Act like you're enjoying it. And he finished it off. I'm telling you, Joe, if the last thing we would have expected that day was for a kid who had thrown one inning at a major college level to go out and lock up the number 15 team in the country. But isn't that what makes this game so much fun?
That is what makes it fun.
You just never know what you're going to see.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, from that level to the major league level, there's always that unexpected player. And that is why we watch so much baseball, because we're always hoping for that. You know, it's fun to see that.
Exactly. Exactly. No, business is good. Football stadium's being renovated. If they had to play a football game in there right now, it wouldn't be a very pretty sight, because it's nothing but dirt and sand and who knows what. But things are – the other thing, and I mentioned this very quickly, is this Saturday, ASU – and ASU has a partial involvement in this – the Pat Tillman run will be held again this year, and it runs through the football stadium. It's not going to do that this year because, again, the football stadium's under a massive renovation. But I know that everybody who listens to your podcast knows the story of Pat Tillman.
Oh yeah,
and
he went to my high school actually.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, the Tillman Foundation has staged this run now, I think, for 12 years. No, 11. To raise money to provide scholarships to kids who lose family members. They have military parents, and if the parents are killed in the line of duty, these kids get scholarships so they can continue their education. And this event just grows and grows and grows. And it's a funny thing, when people, when the subject of the stadium renovation comes up, most of the time, the first question people have is, well, where's the finish line for Pat's run? Because it's usually at the 42-yard line. That was Pat's number in college.
Ah, okay.
Inside Sun Devil Stadium. People aren't really worried about where their seats are going to be for football season. They want to know where the finish line of Pat's run is being moved to. So things are good here. It's
That's
getting
good.
A little too hot here in the desert. So I wouldn't – if I were you, I would plan your next trip sometime in October, you know. But
well, we shall
but all
see.
Is well.
We shall see how the season plays out with the Giants and the Diamondbacks. Jeff, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it and look forward to catching up later on this year.
Joe, I appreciate the time. It's always good to talk baseball with you.
That's Arizona sportscaster Jeff Munn. Join us again on Friday. We're scheduled to talk to John Shea, a regular guest columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.